Hey everyone, it's Rich Bennett, host of Conversations with Rich Bennett, bringing you an exciting chance to win with our latest giveaway sponsored by Tar Heel Construction Group. Get ready to make a splash just by tuning in to the podcast. Yes, you heard that right. While you're soaking up our latest episodes, listen closely for a special splash sound. When you hear it, remember the episode name. Here's what you do next. Shoot us an email at podcast@harfordcountyliving.com with the episode title. Each splash sound means a new chance to win. So the more you listen, the better your chances. If you don't have email, then just leave a voicemail from our website at conversationswithrichbennett.com. What's the prize? How about a brand new waterproof Bluetooth speaker? Perfect for listening to our episodes, whether you're in the bath, on the beach, in the pool, or on the go. You have until the end of May to send in your entries, and we'll announce the lucky winner on June 3rd. Don't miss out on this splashy opportunity brought to you by Tar Heel Construction Group. Dive into our episodes and win big. At the end of each podcast episode, I'm going to recommend a podcast that somehow or another ties into this episode. So please listen to the whole episode of the podcast, because I guarantee you, podcast I recommend, you're going to love. Summertime, a lot of you have pools. The pools, of course, are open. But something you might not know, there is no doubt that raccoons can be a real pain and can spread germs to us, including rabies. However, most people don't know that it's important to keep raccoons out of your pool and watch for raccoon feces in and around your pool. See, the feces can sometimes contain the eggs of a worm that can infect humans, particularly children, and cause severe neurological illness. I bring this up because this is something we didn't cover on this podcast. On this episode, I sat down with members of the Harford County Health Department, and we talked about rabies. This is a very important conversation, so please listen to it. And if you have a pet, make sure you get them vaccinated. Enjoy the conversation.
Coming to you from the Freedom Federal Credit Union Studios, Harford County Living presents Conversations with Rich Bennett.
Come on,
you're faster than
with
me.
Guys. Hey,
yeah.
That was
quick. We've
been together. Oh, man, you already said it. I was going to ask her if she remembered the date. Sitting here today with the Harford County Health Department, and we're going to discuss something that we, I think the last time we talked about it was 2 years ago, maybe? Probably about 2 years ago. But about rabies, because a lot of people feel that they're, immune to different types of animals and can't get rabies. Well, surprise, you can. So we'll go around, starting on my left. Everybody introduce themselves.
I'm Teresa Woodward. I am the program manager for clinical services and infectious disease here at Harford County Health Department.
I'm Bonnie Harbin. I'm the supervisor of the community hygiene program here in the Environmental Health Bureau.
I'm Hannah Lux. I am in the community hygiene program.
Dan Driscoll, I'm the program manager for the inspections division.
Before we were talking, you said you were getting calls. Was that about rabies?
Yeah, what were they? I don't know what they were. She didn't specify.
Oh, over
specify.
The weekend?
Yeah.
It was actually burning complaints that we received.
Oh.
So
oh,
nothing okay. Rabies related, but typically if we're on call, that's the majority of the issues that we deal with.
Right.
Are rabies related calls.
So are you seeing, with rabies, are you seeing it up this year as opposed to the past? Especially now that people are getting out.
I can tell you, it kind of goes in cycles typically. Last year, we tested 13 animals that were positive for rabies, and that was all through 2021. As of today, 2022, we've had 11 positive animals, 9 raccoons and 2 foxes. So it looks like there is an upswing, if that's because people are out and about with their pets more now, since COVID is, I wouldn't say in the rearview mirror, but it's taking a step back. It's
right.
Definitely a possibility.
You said 9 raccoons and 2 foxes?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
So I guess when it comes to like the cats and the dogs, you guys don't get those calls, do you?
Oh, we do.
Oh, you
yeah,
do?
Absolutely
okay.
Do,
we
yes.
do. We've investigated typically on a good year. Well, I wouldn't say good year, but typically over 600 animal bites in a year, being domestic dogs or cats. So far this year, it's been 319 cases that have been investigated.
Wow. So probably a good idea, somebody, especially a fox or a raccoon, if somebody sees them in the wild, they should not try to get them to come up to them.
No. That's absolutely correct. And if the animal holds up to you, you want to steer clear of it because that's not normal behavior for wildlife.
Okay.
Well, the problem is a lot of people want to, you know, help these animals out and they have good intentions, but the problem is you get yourself exposed to wild animal, and then at that point either you have to go through post-exposure treatment for the rabies virus, or that animal has to be put down and tested for rabies that way.
Oh.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's best to just kind of leave it to environmental professionals, wildlife cooperators, that kind of thing, mm-hmm. when it comes to...
Sometimes they just come up in your yard and want to eat.
Everybody wants to feed raccoons.
Yes, they are very
cute. That is the big one. Everybody wants to feed raccoons. Please don't feed raccoons.
I don't have the raccoons come around.
Or they feed their cat colonies, mm-hmm. and then raccoons want to come up and eat what they put out for the cats. And we see a lot of that as well. And that is a real problem.
Feral cats still a big problem here in the county?
There's feral cat colonies all throughout the county. There's mm-hmm. certain organizations that, you know, agree with that policy. We don't endorse that. I mean, we kind of steer clear. Mm-hmm. We did have one positive cat last year. So mm-hmm. even if a cat has had a rabies vaccination, ear-tipped, if that animal were to come in contact with a rabid animal or a potentially rabid animal, just because it's ear-tipped, we can't guarantee that it was vaccinated because the animal may have been injured for some reason. That's
right.
Why if we could put a valid rabies vaccination to that animal, that would be one thing. Ear tipping is great, but we just can't use that as valid proof that the animal has a current vaccination.
So what is that ear? Is that like tagging an animal that...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So they literally will cut the tip of the ear to indicate that it's been neutered. Yeah, they'll do it when they're, you know, asleep or under anesthesia for neutering or things like that.
It's a part of their trap neuter release or trap spay release.
Yeah, okay.
So then mm-hmm. they'll chip the ear to indicate that they've been spayed or neutered.
And that doesn't hurt the animal?
Well, I guess not. They're under general anesthesia for the spay or neuter, so...
I guess it's like getting a piercing for a human, right?
Yeah.
In a way.
Something like that.
Although there ain't nobody clipping my ear. Forget that. No way. So what exactly is rabies? Besides something that's not fun to have.
What exactly? I've never had anybody ask me that question before. It's,
What?
No, nobody says, what is rabies?
It's a viral disease.
Yeah, isn't it like a spirochete similar to... No.
I don't know.
It's a virus.
Yes.
Okay.
Typically, what we're looking for here is incubation period, where if an animal gets bitten, the virus is going to travel the nervous system. Once it reaches the brain, then it starts to proliferate. Then the virus can finally be shed through its salivary glands.
Okay.
So if, say, a raccoon that is rabid bites your dog on its hind end, as opposed to near its neck, it's going to take a little bit longer for the virus to travel mm-hmm. before it reaches its brain and then can become infectious. Once the virus can be transmitted through the salivary gland, the animal has a very short period of time before it's going to die. It's going to cause encephalitis, a swelling of the brain, so the animal is going to expire fairly shortly afterwards. It can transmit the virus typically a couple days before it shows signs or symptoms of rabies, and then once it shows the signs or symptoms, it's gone. So maybe, you know, generally like a 5-day time period that the animal can actually transmit the virus.
So are the symptoms in the animal the same as, like, if a human gets rabies?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, so human rabies is, and it can happen any time within a year after a bite. So it can take quite some time in a human to actually get to the brain tissue and until that human would start to show some signs or symptoms. But it's very similar. It's neurological. So you're going to have your neurological type symptoms.
So disorientation, seizures, that kind of thing. It can cause paralysis. So it's kind of like a wide range of symptoms. It's not just like animals foaming at the mouth. That is like the typical right. like thing that people imagine when they see like rabies.
Yeah. But like Cujo or something.
I can go the exact opposite way where the animal just curls up in a corner and just basically shows no motion whatsoever. So if any of these animals are under quarantine from our office, typically what we tell the homeowner is anything that gives you cause for concern, behavior that you're not familiar with your animal, contact your vet, and then they'll deem, see if it's neurologic or not. If the animal's neurologic, well, we can test the animal, but unfortunately the testing, the animal would have to be put to sleep.
Right.
And we can typically get those results back within 24 hours.
So when an animal is quarantined, like if I have a dog and the dog's been has rabies, I don't quarantine the animal in my house, right?
So say you have your dog,
mm-hmm.
it bites your next door neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
If it's vaccinated or unvaccinated, the quarantine's the same. It's 10 days. It's quarantined at your house.
Oh, it is? Okay.
And basically we want the animal to only have contact with family members, no long walks in the park, family get-togethers, anything like that. At the end of the 10 days, a representative from this office will come out, just observe the animal. If that animal could have transmitted rabies, it physically would have passed away within that time frame.
Okay.
So if it's alive, we contact the victim and they're good to go. They don't need any type of post-exposure treatment.
Okay.
So we typically work together on a lot of these types of cases. So the environmental health does the animal part. We do, in communicable disease, do mm-hmm. the human piece of it. So we also do an assessment, talk to the victim and find out what sort of exposure may have happened. A lot of times we talk to the family. What is really, really important, one of the big points I want to make here, though, is no one's going to come along and take the pet.
Yeah. Right.
No one is going, and over and over again, people think that they're going to get in trouble, and so they will, they'll give the animal away, they'll not, they refuse to disclose yeah. where they've, yeah, they hide it at another
yeah.
household, because or they hide it within their household, they refuse to speak with our environmental health, who is just trying mm-hmm. to quarantine the animal. But they really believe, and in all of those cases, people need to understand that nobody's going to take their pet away.
Right.
Nobody's going to harm their pet. They're not going to get in trouble. This isn't about that. It's not a punitive thing. It's just basically that we need to watch it to keep people from having to go through rabies
it's
treatment.
Called protection.
Because rabies treatment is not a fun thing to have to go through.
Right.
And if we can't find that animal, we automatically then would have to refer that person, that victim, to get rabies treatment.
Yeah, that's not fun.
And I think part of the reason that people get kind of freaked out is if they go to any medical practice, so like an urgent care, their own doctor's office, their doctor's required to report to us that there was a bite or a scratch.
Okay.
So even your own pet scratches you or bites you, you have to go to urgent care. They're going to contact us and also animal control. And so I think it's animal control. People get a little freaked out when they, show up or when they find out that the form's being sent to them. But as Teresa said, yeah, we're not in the business of taking animals. We only ask for information because we are trying to just establish the health of everyone and your animal. And it is really scary. I've gone through it when my cat bit me and I'm like crying and animal control shows up. But we just need to try to, I feel like I spend a lot of times just reassuring people, it's okay. Mm-hmm. You're not in trouble.
I always say, we don't take animals. If we did, we'd have, 500 cats and dogs in our office.
Right.
So, no.
And Dan wouldn't let us do that.
Yes.
I've been doing this 25 years. And I would say I could probably count the number of animals that have been removed from the household on one hand.
Really?
It's usually an animal that you would consider a vicious mauling, where it's a danger to the public in general.
Right.
That happens very infrequently. And that is not on our office. We do not remove the animals. We're just here to verify the animal's health. That would be animal control would make that decision
right.
if the animal needed to be removed.
We keep talking about bites, and I don't know if I brought this up on the last time we were talking about rabies, but what about with saliva, especially mm-hmm. From a bat? Mm-hmm. Because I understand that even if you get the saliva from a bat on your skin, if it's a rabbit, you can still get rabies.
So you would have to have like an open wound.
Right. It has to have a portal of entry.
Yes.
Without that portal of entry, you're not going to get rabies from it. So you have to have a cut, an opening in your skin.
So maybe the confusion with bats is sometimes their bites are so small that you might not even notice that you
get. Maybe that's what it
was. So bats are kind of the most worrisome when it comes to, especially when it comes to human exposures and Teresa's group, what they have to deal with. Because, you know, people will wake up in the middle of the night to a bat in their bedroom.
Right.
You don't know if you've been bitten. So we always tell people, you know, don't just shoo the bat outside. You know, make sure that bat
try to catch it.
You can catch it in a coffee can or something, or you can, you know, call animal control or whatever.
Pillowcases work pretty well.
Yeah.
I was going to say, if somebody catches a bat in a coffee can, I want to find that person because that's talent.
We get a lot of bats in coffee cans.
Are you serious?
Well, because once they're downed, they
have a hard time getting up. They can't really.
So if you can get them on the ground, then you can kind of
scoop them up.
Okay. Because
of course, with gloves.
My brother had twice. He found a bat in his house, and he could not catch that thing to save his life.
Right. Yeah. Well, my mom, I had gone home one time, and she has three cats inside, and there was a bat that was laying underneath one of her living room tables. So I called animal control out. They just scooped it up. They told me, you know, it's on the ground. It's going to be easy for us to get. And, you know, I got the results the next day that it was a negative bat, thank goodness. So none of the cats had to be quarantined or no one needed post-exposure treatment. But it's really important that we are able to test any bat that someone might have exposure to.
I guess if that bat's on the ground, it's probably injured, I would think.
Yeah, or it could be disoriented, which could be a sign, you know, of rabies. Or it could, you know, just simply have been in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, unfortunately, we get the question quite a bit of this animal looked funny, this animal looked lethargic. All these strange symptoms are like, it must be.
I was gonna say, you probably get that with foxes a lot with the mange.
Well, I mean, with raccoons and bats, I would say if we submit it, it's a quarter flip, 50-50 if it's going to come back positive or negative.
Right.
And ones that I thought that were going to be positive were negative, and then ones I thought were negative are going to be positive.
So which animals, I mean, what's the ones that carry the rabies the most that you've seen?
In this area would be raccoons. Most of the East Coast is raccoons. Well, pretty much all of the East Coast is raccoons.
Wow.
But different parts of the country have different primary vectors. So I know, like, the Midwest is mostly foxes and bats. And then West is more like skunks
and bats.
Did you say that the animal has to be put down before you can test it for rabies?
Yeah. Right. Correct. So you have to test the brain tissue or spinal material.
So there's not a blood test that you can do.
Okay.
So that's why we do the quarantines for dogs or cats, so to not needlessly put down any animal.
And that's why we have to test the animal, because we can't test the human.
Right.
And it is the saliva and the neurotissue that is contagious or that is infectious that we create.
What about possums?
Yes. There is a myth that possums...
And that's why I wanted to bring that up.
I'm not sure the source of that myth, but yeah.
Well, I remember one of my first days in the community hygiene division, I went up to Dan and I was like, oh, well, possums, they don't get rabies though, right? And he's like, what are you talking about? I was like, well, I saw on Facebook, like, everyone always posts, like, oh, they're great because they eat ticks, they don't carry rabies.
Right.
They definitely do carry rabies.
They do eat ticks, but they can also carry rabies.
Yes, any mammal can carry rabies. Has the potential to.
So don't believe what you find on the internet.
That's correct.
Call the health department.
But rabid squirrels are less likely to be encountered.
Right.
Also.
Right. Oh. So rodents, you know, and I guess, is a possum? Is that
it? Yeah, it's a rodent.
Right? Yeah, but they're big
and
enough.
Maybe that's why the myth is there, because most people think, well, rodents generally don't carry rabies because it's considered that they're so small.
Mm-hmm.
That if they were to be attacked by a wild animal, they probably another rabid animal, they probably wouldn't live through it. And so they are not going to live on to carry rabies, but that's not always 100% the case.
So we get a lot of calls, somebody's feeding the peanuts, you know, to the squirrels, and they get bit.
Yep.
And then if we have to call the state public health veterinarian, they consider that a provoked bite because you were trying to feed them. Now, if there was a squirrel that maybe jumped out of a tree and bit you, I think we could get permission, but we do have to get permission from the state health vet to submit a rodent, because the likelihood of them having rabies is so minute.
I think I had three different reports lately of baby squirrels. and the states.
Being rabid?
No, they're not actually rabid, but they were bites. And, you know, people call and they're really freaking out. Over
right.
Baby squirrels, this baby squirrel and that baby squirrel. I'm like, why are you touching the baby squirrel?
Yeah. Just stay away from wildlife in general.
Yeah, they may be cute, but the shots are nowhere near as cute, so yeah. Stay away from
not
them.
Cute.
Yeah,
not
they're just fun. Very expensive as mm-hmm. well. So.
And so you have to go to the emergency room for the first visit, pretty much, at least in Harford County.
Right.
Because you have to get the immune globulin, and that's the first step of the rabies treatment. So getting the rabies immunoglobulin is... is expensive, very expensive. And you're talking about an ER visit, which right off the bat is expensive just walking through the door. It's very time consuming. So it's a pain.
It's definitely not as bad as it used to be back in the day. I mean, you don't have to get like tons of shots anymore. It's
not in the belly like they used to be.
Really?
That is now, long gone. And people, I find a lot of people still think that that is the way it's done, and that is not the way it's done. So you get your immunoglobulin in and around the wound, needs to be infiltrated, and you get that first, and then you get a vaccine in a distal site and on that same day, all at the same time, and that's your day zero, and then you would go back and get vaccines on day 7, day 14, and day 21.
What if they can't find the wound? Like if it, you had a bat on you, you went like that.
They would still do it in and around where the bat was.
Wherever it like landed.
So it's not 11 shots at one time?
No.
It could be. I mean, immunoglobulin is given according to weight. So that is where you get the multiple injections.
So you're going to receive a lot more than him. So I wouldn't get
there. There you go.
Any type of animal that somebody finds in their neighborhood, if they believe it's rabid, I would assume they're going to call animal control first.
Correct. Or they could call DNR.
Is it alive or is it dead? Because there's a difference. If it's alive...
Well, I know there's a difference between being alive and dead.
Well, there's a difference on who you call. If it's alive, you don't call us. But if it's already dead, we will come and we will pick it up.
Only if there's an exposure issue.
Though. Yeah.
You know, if there's a raccoon dead in your yard and your pets have not been near it, nobody's had an exposure, we're going to tell you to bury it on site.
Yeah, or double bag it and then throw it out so that way you don't...
If there's been exposure, we'll pick it up.
I was going to say, but how would you know if there's been exposure or not? Because...
I mean, I would hope you would know if you've let your animals out in the yard or not.
Provided you have a fenced-in yard. But if there's other animals around, like your neighbors...
Well, we would need some kind of correlation with a wound.
Okay.
Something of that nature.
Huh. Okay.
I mean, if we found, and we have before, a raccoon in a pendant area where there's horses, we have tested that before. Because more than likely the horses have dispatched the animal. And but that's kind of a unique situation too, because Department of Agriculture gets involved with livestock.
Yeah.
So when you think about an exposure, let's say it is a farm in the northern part of the county. You know, you have your horses that could be exposed to this rabid raccoon, or let's say they also have barn cats, or they have a farmhand that works there. You know, and also may have had contact with that raccoon.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of different moving parts, different organizations kind of working together to get the rabies case all sorted out.
And on to go back to the quarantines, that's why if you do have barn cats, which are an important part of your farm, you should make sure that you have a way to identify each of them and have them up to date on their rabies vaccine. Because otherwise, if there is a positive animal, the quarantine is much longer and much stricter, which can be hard, especially for cats that are used to living outdoors, that then they have to be in a double enclosure inside for 4 months if there is no record of their rabies vaccine, compared to a 45-day quarantine if there is one.
I'm glad you brought that up, the vaccines. How often, does a pet have to get the vaccine just once, or is it every year?
So for the quarantines, they need to have one ever.
Okay.
So that is the distinguishing. From a vet point of view, what vets will say, what they recommend, and what is recommended by, the American Association of Vets is cats can get either 1 or 3 year, but a lot of vets only do 1 year for cats.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a side thing. Dogs typically their first one is a 1 year, and then after that it's every 3 years.
Every 3 years. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, yeah, I know a lot of people take their animals to the vets for that, but the health department also does rabies vaccination as well, right?
Yeah, so we run clinics a couple times a year. So the last weekend in April and typically the first weekend in May, mm-hmm. we'll run clinics at the fire stations. So this year we did it in Havre de Grace, Aberdeen, and Jarrettsville.
Okay.
So that gives an opportunity for a lot cheaper of a vaccination than having to go to your vet. You know, you just go there for the vaccine. But we also have World Rabies Day at the end of September, where we run a clinic as well.
So, because I know, in, God, especially around here, you see a lot of stray cats, even stray dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And some people try to be good people and they want to get them vaccinated. Is this something they should actually do when you guys are offering the vaccination?
I mean, they can. People have brought in like a bunch of their, you know, feral cats they have on their property. Mm-hmm. They'll load them up in carriers and bring them to our clinics. So that's a good opportunity for them to get vaccinated. But, you know, it is always a good idea to take them to the vet. You know,
okay.
Yeah, get them spayed, neutered.
We'll vaccinate dogs, cats, and ferrets.
Oh, ferrets. I forgot mm-hmm. about that.
And they have to be at least 3 months of age. And or if they're not sure the age of the animal, our vet will make a decision on site if they can be vaccinated or not.
Right.
Speaking of pets, let's take a break a minute and talk about our sponsor, Eternal Paw Prints. You know, death is a part of life. It's inevitable. We know that. And at Eternal Paw Prints, they strive to make this process as easy and peaceful as they can for you and your pet so that they can pass on with the dignity and grace that your furry family member and you deserve. Dr. Shannon is awesome. I've met her a few times, and I wish she was here 13 years ago when, unfortunately, I had to put my dog down. At the time, there was no such thing, at least that I know of, as in-home hospice. They wouldn't come to your home and take care of it. And I had to take her to the vet. I couldn't even take her in. My sister-in-law had to. One of the hardest things I've ever done. And since that time, I have not been able to have another pet. I just, in a way, I felt guilty. I still feel guilty. But I know that if Dr. Shannon was around then and she came to my house and did this, I could have been there, you know, with my dog Blossom and a lot, as well as my kids. And I just think it would have made the process a lot easier. So if it is that time and you're worried, you don't know what to do, give Dr. Shannon a call. Eternal Paw Prints, 410-777-8557. Again, that's 410-777-8557. Go to myeternalpawprints.com so you can see all the different services that she offers. This is great for the family as well as other pets. So if you have other pets, let's face it, when one of them goes over the Rainbow Bridge, the other ones are affected. But I think while they're there, it just makes them feel more at ease. And Dr. Shannon can do that for you.
What about like pigs, because you see a lot of people have the pot-bellied pigs now.
Yeah, we actually have a pig on quarantine. The quarantine is up today. It's currently at the Humane Society, mm-hmm. which the Humane Society, we also work pretty closely with them because a lot of times they will do the quarantines for animals. First of all, because they just have a lot of animals. So sometimes when people are like looking to adopt an animal, there might be an accidental bite or scratch. Or right. if somebody surrenders their animal that bit somebody, they will have it on the quarantine before, you know, they kind of decide what the next steps are. But, yeah, pigs can technically get rabies. As far as I know, there's not a vet-recommended rabies vaccine for pigs. Some people, there is one, but I don't believe that most American vets recommend it. But maybe for pot-bellied pigs, that's okay. kind of changing.
Not necessarily for a pet pig, but even a farm pig.
Mm-hmm.
So if one does get rabies and you have to put it down, that meat cannot be used to eat, right?
So I'll say I worked on a pig farm for a summer,
okay.
and that was wow. never a concern. Rabies okay. was never a concern with them because, so pigs are very, very sensitive immune system-wise.
Okay.
So there is nothing in a commercial pig farm that is getting in unless it's a mouse or a bug or us humans.
Right.
But like a pig farm, you have to shower into the facility even to get in.
That's really?
Because their immune systems are so sensitive. So there's not going to be a groundhog that could be rabid that then would bite a pig that then could, you know, get in. It's just so unlikely that it's not even a concern.
Wow.
Yeah.
I had no
so
idea.
Like anytime a pig would bite or scratch you, you don't. On a on the commercial pig farm that I worked in, which
okay.
was in Pennsylvania, not in Maryland, that was not a concern that we had ever because of that biosecurity level that you maintain with pig farms specifically.
Okay.
Now, I will say that's on a commercial farm. That's
cutting
not
right.
yes.
Harford County, where I've actually, it's been about 15 years ago, where a farmer's pig had gotten loose. I don't know how he was able to identify it, but came back about a year later, and it had gone totally, completely feral. It started to grow tusk.
Get out of here!
It had to be put down, and we submitted that for testing. Luckily, that was negative.
Yeah, so on like a much, much smaller scale animals, you might have that concern, where on like your industrial scale, that's not.
So, incidentally, I thought was really funny, Saturday, I think it was Saturday, I'm just scrolling through Facebook, and my friend posted, you just never know what you're going to see walking across your backyard, and lo and behold, it was a potbelly pig strolling through the neighborhood in his yard, and I said, do you know who it belongs to? He said, I have no idea. So, just... for all of us, you know, and it was in a development.
I mean, we get
children
animals
running around, so
we'll get animals for pickup all over the place. So whether it be here in Bel Air in a residential neighborhood, or it could be up in Street Darlington,
right?
So, you know, someone lets their dog out in the morning, and you know they have a fenced yard, and they're not really thinking. They look outside, and their dog is fighting a raccoon. So in that situation, you want to definitely have the raccoon tested, rather than having to go through the quarantine procedure, at least initially. So, whenever we can't test an animal, we have to assume it's positive. So the animal, the dog would immediately have to be on a quarantine. So,
right.
Sometimes the homeowner will dispatch the animal themselves. but one thing to take into consideration is the brain material is tested with these animals, so we want to make sure that the brain material is intact. So if a homeowner wants to dispatch the animal themselves,
avoid the head, please.
Correct.
Okay. One of the things I have noticed, though, is you're seeing more wild animals in people's yards now.
Yeah.
Right.
I guess it's because all the construction
development,
they're doing, they have nowhere to go.
Mm-hmm. Also food sources.
Yeah.
Yes, and I'm glad you mentioned that, too, because people don't necessarily have to be feeding the raccoons and all, but these animals, possums, raccoons, love bird feeders, and bears, too. What is it with the bears lately as well around here? But, I mean, how in the world can somebody prevent that? Because bird seed's going to fall on the ground.
Well, they could not have bird feeders.
Oh, but then little birds got to eat.
I mean, there's suet cakes, which are a little bit, like, neater.
Less,
of a,
yeah.
Yeah, so you can put a suet cake in, like, a feeder, and it's a solid, it's seeds suspended in, like, usually it's animal fat, so they can peck at that instead of, like, having just loose seed.
Yeah, squirrels love them, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I found that out. Yeah. They just, they're, and possums. Well, we had a possum coming around all the time, which... I'm glad that you guys broke that myth. Now I'm not, if he comes back again, I'm not going to try to get him to come to me. Oh, he was cute.
They are very cute.
They are. I mean, they got some ugly looking teeth.
Their tails are a little scary.
Well, yeah, it looks like a rat tail.
Yeah.
You know, crazy. But no, he was eating all, he kept going to where the bird feeders were. And there was suet because them big blackbirds will get in there and tear that suet up and knock it down on the ground.
That's true.
I mean, there's a lot of cute wildlife out there.
It's not cute when they bite
you. I don't recommend you cuddling a tiger.
If you're up near the king and queen seat and you see a beaver running at you, which we've had a rabid beaver before, you don't want to get bit by an animal that has 3-inch long teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah, those things should tear you up.
Really positive otter in Anne Arundel. Oh,
yeah. Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And it like went after somebody's dog, and that's why they tested it.
That's not good. And beavers, it seems like you're seeing a lot more beavers around here, too, as well. Mm-hmm. Otters, I haven't. Well,
I don't know if we have otters here.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do, but you don't see them a whole lot.
No, not very often.
You're seeing, I mean, at least where I'm at, I'm seeing a lot more beavers. Squirrels always.
You have to go to Otter Creek.
Actually, we have something down to Gunpowder. I don't know if it was an otter or a water rat. I have no idea what it was. But
muskrat,
it was,
maybe.
Yeah, it could have been a muskrat.
Or muskrat, that's what I meant, a muskrat. Could have been, because, I mean, we have muskrat around here, too.
Yep, we do.
So,
I've seen them there.
So if somebody needs to get a hold of you guys, who do they call?
So it kind of depends on what's going on. So our office is always a good initial place to call. So at the Environmental Health Office, our number 410-877-2300. That's where you can call to report any kind of exposure that your animal might have had. If you're concerned about, you know, a bat that's maybe in your house, or you know, your animal came back with a wound and you don't know what's from.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of vets will call us directly because they'll see a lot of patients that come in with wounds that we put on a quarantine. So calling the Harford County Environmental Health Office is a good place to start. If there's a human exposure, we'll go ahead and refer you over to our partners at the Communicable Disease Division.
Okay. And what's the website?
HarfordCountyHealth.com.
Why does that seem like it's always the hard question?
Well, it's always
.com.
Yeah, is it .org or .gov or .com?
I always do that too, but it's .com.
Yeah.
So do you guys actually go out, besides doing the rabies vaccinations and all that, to the community and educate them on these things?
Well, we do have a lot of handout literature that we provide at various events. Typically, it would have to be in conjunction with you know, something that we're sponsoring, like the clinics, or it used to be at the farm fairs where we used to have tables at that point. We do license campgrounds throughout the state, throughout the county anyway. We have provided them with literature and posters as need be.
To distribute the brochures out to the vets as well. So anytime someone comes in and they have a pet that was exposed to an animal or has a wound of unknown origin, the vet should be giving them our rabies quarantine pamphlet that kind of explains, you know, what rabies is and the difference between a 45-day and a 4-month strict quarantine.
What about, because something I see a lot more of besides the vets, you have the groomers, you have the pet sitters, the pet walkers. Are you getting the brochures out to them as well? Or can they actually?
No, but we should.
Yeah. I mean, because you're, especially your pet walkers, because they're the ones that are, could be.
Yeah, and we do get quite a few bite reports for individuals in that situation.
And as far as the vet offices, we do pre-exposure vaccination clinics.
Okay.
So we will have the veterinary offices call us, and we actually have clients all over the place. Some in Pennsylvania come down, some from other counties come in. So we do get quite a bit of that. And then we also do our own animal control, and our staff here as well have their vaccines. So they can call the immunization department if any vet or anybody that, you know, works at a vet's office or has high-risk exposure and would like to get pre-exposure vaccination.
Okay.
And most of the people,
like, it's expensive, but it is an option.
Like the dog walkers and things, they would find out about the rabies quarantines when they went to, if they were bit and they went to like an urgent care, they're going to tell them, hopefully. Yeah, I mean, because they'll have to fill out our animal bite scratch report forms.
Yeah.
And all of those urgent cares have them, or they call us directly to report it.
Wait, you said animal bite or scratch?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So any kind of exposure where you're going to, because, I mean, animals groom themselves, so they, you know, if they're grooming their hands and they scratch you, that's opening up a wound that could introduce the rabies virus. So,
any kind of like saliva exposure, so bites, scratches, and open wounds, you know, that's something that we would want to address.
Which I guess people with cats, because then they just pass a law where you can't declaw them now?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So people with pets better, or with cats better, keep an eye on that stuff, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to
they like to scratch.
Yeah, well, then you should be, you know, if you're getting a significant scratch from your cat, you should probably be seeking medical. I mean, not like the little ones that don't really break skin, but if you're getting a significant scratch from a cat, because there are other diseases other than rabies that are probably much more likely in your house cat that, you know, your doctor might want mm-hmm. to prescribe you an antibiotic and a tetanus shot for.
Mm-hmm.
Because cats' claws and mouths are
very dirty
in terms of diseases.
Yes, but you know you keep their nails trimmed. Well, you keep their nails trimmed. They have like little caps you can put on cats' nails,
which are rather difficult to
what?
Do.
What?
My cats are indoor cats. They just don't go outside, and that took care of that problem right away. Bam, done.
Yeah, I mean, having your cats inside is a good way to prevent, you know, exposure to the rabies virus, and you know, also kind of limiting that.
Yes.
But cats are great. You should still adopt and love cats. But yes they're.
I like dogs better. I'm sorry.
The only thing I
dogs' mouths are also dirty.
Was with Teresa, since she has indoor cats, a lot of times people feel that. Since they're strictly indoor animals, they do not need a rabies vaccination. That's not the truth, because if the door gets... I can't tell you how many times this happens. Mm-hmm. Door opens up, the animal runs free, mm-hmm. comes back several days later, it has an injury. We don't know if it got caught on the fence or what happened. We have to assume it was from a rabid animal. And the vaccination is the difference between a very easy 45-day quarantine inside the house as opposed to a 4-month where it's inside a cage, inside of a separate bedroom where only one person has contact with
and
it.
And nobody wants to do that to
exactly.
No. That's just a horrible thing.
It's awful.
Yeah, so it's easier. And my cats are up to date on their...
I'm sure. I don't think he was calling you out on it.
Just say.
Are you feeling guilty
just
there?
It's worth the $8 vaccine from us to avoid any... ever potential 4-month quarantine, no matter how unlikely it is. If it costs $8 to not have to ever worry about that, it's worth it.
Yep.
All right, I'm probably going to have a lot of people that listen to this get mad at me for this question, but there are a lot of people out there that have mainly dogs that they will not take to the vets for their vaccines for nothing. Because they unfortunately use these dogs for wrong purposes, or they're rescued, or they just don't want to bother with it. Which means, I have a funny feeling if that dog ever got bit, they would ignore that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Can somebody, if they know that there's something wrong with their dog, mm-hmm. can a neighbor call anonymously or whatever? I guess it would have to call animal control, right?
It would probably be an animal control, and then they would have to do like a wellness check.
Okay.
And then it could possibly escalate to us if there was a wound of unknown origin after.
Right.
But that's mostly an animal control, I think.
Okay.
I mean, the thing that people have to realize is that, you know, rabies is pretty much a 100% chance. Once you show symptoms, you know,
it's fatal.
Right.
It's fatal. So you really don't want to take the chance on it. So it's just better to just get your dog vaccinated. Even if it's just, again, at one of our clinics, you don't have to take it to the vet if you
mm-hmm.
know, that's your prerogative.
Like some farm stores that will do it for a little more than what we charge, but less than a vet visit.
Yeah,
right.
And they do them pretty much like twice a month, it seems like,
okay.
that these farm stores will vaccinate. So there's a lot of opportunities to do it, and it's really just for, you know, your pet's health and also your family's health as well.
Well, and your neighbors, too.
Right.
I mean, that's because it's always been a pet peeve of mine, no pun intended, but people that raise these dogs, well, let's face it, to teach them how to fight, and they just ignore all the laws and everything and throw everything out the window.
Right.
And what they're doing is wrong in the first place. But that worries me too, because, you know, where they're doing it is on this open land where you see a lot of wild animals,
mm-hmm.
and you don't know how these wild animals are. I mean, especially if you're
idiot like me and try to feed them. So.
Yeah, well, if anybody has any concern about the welfare of an animal, you know, animal control is a great resource to call. And they'll come out and they'll do an assessment and make sure the living conditions are appropriate and make sure they're getting proper medical care.
Okay.
Just with the wild animals, if you call animal control, they typically are not going to trap any wildlife.
Right.
Unless it's deemed a rabies vector and it needs to be tested for some particular reason. You're not allowed to trap a potentially rabid animal or an animal that could transmit rabies and relocate it.
Yeah.
So basically, if you just see wildlife, just let it wander free.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we found that out because we had a deer, or my neighbor had a deer in the yard called animal control. And animal control's like, the deer's not doing anything. There ain't nothing we can do.
That's right.
It's like, but it's in my sense. It'll hop over. Hopped over to get in. It's going to hop over to get out.
All these animals were here before we were, so they...
Yes, definitely.
Right.
Do you guys have anything to add whatsoever?
Bugs cannot transmit rabies.
Huh? Yes.
Bugs cannot transmit rabies.
Birds people actually believe it?
Rabies. Yeah, birds reptiles cannot transmit rabies. Reptiles cannot transmit rabies. Remember, it has to be a mammal.
Yes.
Do people... Are there people that actually believe that, though?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a matter of...
gotten reports.
I think some of the urgent care is patient first. They take our bite reports a little bit too literal sometimes.
Okay.
Like basically, a mosquito bite?
They might be trying to be extra cautious. Which, you know, is probably for the best.
Right.
But just if everybody, you know, knows that it has to be a mammal.
Yes.
But we do periodically take information to the urgent care centers as well as our ERs and any other doctor's offices that request it. We will take information to them and give them some idea of what, you know, some good education.
Yeah, I would say, you know, just kind of leave wildlife alone, watch your pets when they're outside, you know, definitely keep an eye on them. And if you have any question whatsoever, if you or your pet has been exposed to any kind of zoonotic disease of any kind, call our office. You know, we can talk you through it and see if post-exposure treatment is required or not. So it's always better to be safe.
And all these brochures and information you guys have, is that on the website as well? Good question.
I know the general rabies, if it's not on our website, it's definitely on the Maryland Department of Health website.
Okay.
Our rabies quarantines brochure is relatively new, so that one might not be up yet.
We can add it.
Yeah, so that can be added. But yeah, the Maryland Department of Health, they have a fairly good rabies information page as well.
Tell everybody the number again to call you guys in case they have any questions they want answered.
410-877-2300.
And the website?
HarfordCountyHealth.com.
Where do they look for it for you guys on the website?
There should be a section for environmental health, and then under that,
consumer protection.
Mm-hmm. And you'll see rabies right there.
And yeah, our communicable disease also has a paragraph there.
See, you passed. You did good. I want to thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
I want to thank the Harford County Health Department again for coming on and telling us about rabies and how important the vaccines are. So, again, if you have a pet, please make sure you get them vaccinated. And as far as the recommended podcast, I was having a hard time trying to find a podcast that strictly talked about rabies. As a matter of fact, I couldn't find one. But I did find one, and I'm surprised I forgot all about this because this is probably one of the biggest podcasts out there when it comes to pets. And that's Talking Pets with John Patch. It's a radio show that offers live, fun-filled discussions about pets and, you know, other friends in the animal kingdom. And actually, some of these episodes, they have talked about rabies. So I'll have a link in the show notes for that podcast. But again, it's Talking Pets. I'd like to remind you once again, if you would like to be on the podcast, if you know somebody that would like to be on the podcast, or if there's something that you would like us to talk about on the podcast, just email me at rbennett@harfordcountyliving.com. And actually, you can even go to the website Conversations with Rich Bennett. I believe there's a form on there that you can fill out as well. And I'll of course, I'll respond back to you and get you on the show or get the other person on the show or talk about that subject. Like to also remind you to please subscribe to the podcast because I'm doing contests and giveaways sometimes throughout the year. And if you're already subscribed or you follow the podcast, then you're already entered every time. So you can go to Apple, Spotify. You can even join the newsletter. It's another way that you can subscribe to the podcast. And again, you could do all that at conversationswithrichbennett.com. My name is Rich Bennett. And until next time, stay safe and thank you for taking part in the conversation.